Hello, and welcome to the Bristol History Podcast with me, Tom Brothwell. The Bristol History Podcast is brought to you in partnership with the Bristol Cable. The Bristol Cable is the city's media cooperative, owned and created by local people. This week, I met with Pete Insole, Historic Environment Officer for Bristol City Council, to discuss the fantastic historical mapping tool, Know Your Place, and also to talk more broadly about planning in Bristol. Our chat was recorded in a busy City Council office at the end of last year, so apologies for the background chatter, but don't worry, we weren't breaking any lockdown regulations. I began by asking Pete how he became involved in looking after the heritage of the city.
So my role is a Historic Environment Officer for the Council within the Planning Department. So within that context, my role is to essentially look after the heritage of the city for this generation and future generations. So we make sure we recognise what is special about the place, and we make sure that it remains special for people going forwards. So my background is archaeology, so that's where I started in fieldwork archaeology in the city, working for what was the kind of ex-museum field unit, Bristol and Regent Archaeological Services. Did a lot of excavations around the city and across the region. And as part of that, that kind of drew me into working in local government and the planning side of things, about looking after these, archaeology to start with, but then also looking at conservation areas, listed buildings, all these other sorts of things. Now, to do that within my job here in the council, we use a software, GIS software, Geographic Information System, which is basically like a database of all the archaeological and historic sites across the city, so map-based. And I'd be doing that as my day job to help understand what the planning impacts would be for any development proposal, what the impacts on heritage would be from any development proposal. As new technologies were being enabled for web publishing of this sort of data, I saw a website, Cheshire Tithe Maps Online, and I thought, well, that is a really good way to present heritage information.
Yeah,
that was purely just map. The old maps, and you could overlay old maps on new maps and all that sort of stuff that you can do on Know Your Place now. So I sort of said to my colleagues who run our GIS system here in the council, I said, look, can we do something like that for Bristol? And he said, yeah, if there was money available, yeah, anything's possible. And by chance, this is about 2011 when we started having these conversations, well, 2010, by chance at that time, English Heritage, now Historic England, were putting out some funding for local authorities to make their databases more accessible or do more creative things with their databases, what we call the historic environment record. That's what we're looking at. And so I pitched this idea to English Heritage, and then we were lucky. They liked the idea, the idea being that we would present all of our information, old maps, images and so forth, but we would also invite members of the public to add their own information to the website. We crowdsource people's own stories about place, but the whole idea about understanding about how these places had developed and how we get to the city we see today and what these places mean for the people who live and work and play in the city now. And we were lucky. English Heritage said, yeah, it sounds like a great idea, here's some money. And over the next 9 months, I worked with GIS colleagues and colleagues from the archives and the museum to basically create Know Your Place. So we presented the old maps and some old images, and we had this crowdsourcing facility on there, and it was all about building a shared understanding of the story of Bristol. That's what we're trying to do. That's the kind of the mission statement, if you like, so that we can all see how the city has got to be where it is. Because as soon as you put an old map over a new map, you can see, oh, that's the same as it was back in the Victorian times, or, oh, that's changed because of the war, or whatever it might be. These stories are really important.
Sounds to me like a real belief in the value of history, and I mean, Know Your Place. Yeah. It's obviously got a kind of Know Your Place, but then the feeling of actually coming to understand why your neighbourhood looks like it looks like, and like you say, why this street looks like this, and why these buildings look like they do.
Yeah, I mean, my background, as I say, archaeology is my background. What I'm most interested in is landscapes and how landscapes have changed over time, and how we could actually, how they can be changed for the future to make the places better. You know, I'm working in a team with other colleagues who are not historians or but they are planners, they're urban designers or architects, and they're all looking at the future. So Know Your Place is really a join between the past and the future to make sure that the future is built on or built with a clear understanding about what this city is about, where it's come from, so it doesn't lose its identity.
For sure.
We don't want Bristol to suddenly become an anywhere place. Bristol's got a really, really strong identity. We need to make sure that that identity is recognised, that's recognised, or that awareness, that understanding is developed in partnership with communities, with neighbourhoods, rather than it being me, the expert, saying, I tell you what Bristol's all about.
For sure.
It shouldn't be about that. It's about trying to give everyone a say in what is important about Bristol and its built fabric. That's kind of what it's about.
Did you get a good response straight away? Did it take a while for people to learn about the website and understand that they could submit material? How did it?
When you do a crowdsourcing website like this, you rapidly get a distribution map of engagement, you know. And I quite often, when I'm doing talks about Know Your Place, I quite often say to people, I bet you can tell me which neighbourhoods added information from the day one, and which ones were much more reticent, or maybe hadn't even engaged with it, or whatever the reason might be. And you can say, well, you could see there was green diamonds. Basically, when someone adds something to the map, it does get validated by me. It doesn't go straight magic onto the map. It's actually like I have to moderate it, if you like. And the green diamonds you see on the map when you first come to the site, that's what we call the community layer. That's information that's been added by members of the public. And that information, within a few weeks, is going into Henley's and Clifton and places like this.
Yeah.
Whereas I then said, well, actually, we need to get a much broader distribution map of that engagement, if you like, or the stories coming from other neighbourhoods. So we actually started working with the University of Bristol and actually going out to communities through a project called Know Your Bristol, which was an Arts, Humanities, Research Council funded project, essentially working by going out to neighbourhoods and listening to people, talking to people, saying this is what we know already, and actually addressing where those blanks on the map were, saying I know there's history here, I know there are stories here, we should go there and listen to what people say about that, and we'll work with them to actually upload that information. As a result of that, you'd start to get a better distribution map.
There are
still lots of blank areas on the map, and I'm always trying to get more and more information in. And we've had other projects working with volunteers to fill in those gaps, looking at some of those other layers, because I think one of the things in terms of that engagement with the site, a lot of people don't realise how much other information is on here, because there's so many other different layers that are coming out of the archives, and all of that information, almost all of that information, is the result of work by volunteers who are working remotely. I sometimes don't even meet them, I don't even know who they are, but they are working with my colleagues in the archives or in the library or in the museum, and they basically get given a set of images and they do research, and then they add those images to the map into one of these other layers, what we call the City Archive Collection. So those are developing and they do cover the whole of the city, but we couldn't do that without that team effort, if you like, of all these volunteers that are putting that time in. So now, with all that information, including the community layer, there's over 14,000 points you can add, which you can view on the map, which have all got links, or most of them have got links to an image and some detailed information.
Know Your Place is a website that allows you to explore Bristol through historic maps, images, and linked information. Beginning in 2011, Know Your Place has become an amazing repository of historical information on the city, and if you're a listener to this podcast, you're highly likely to find something of interest there. It's nested on the bristol.gov.uk site, but the easiest way to access it is just to search for Know Your Place Bristol. At first glance, Know Your Place looks like Google Maps, but on closer inspection, you begin to get a sense of the rich heritage that it contains. For instance, you can choose from 18 different base maps of the city, from composite maps dating as far back as 1750 to modern ordnance survey or aerial photographic mapping. The selection of a comparison map and a main map allows you to swipe easily between the two and see, For example, the similarities and differences between the 1855 Ashmead map and a 2012 aerial shot of the city. You can then choose how much or how little detail is shown on the map by using the information layer checkboxes. And these range from matter-of-fact information, such as blue plaques or listed buildings, to more thematically organised content, such as historic locations related to the World Wars or to LGBT life in the city. Pete Insole again.
That's right. I mean, essentially it's divided into base maps, which are historic maps, and which you can overlay with various different controls, and that's all controlled from a menu that's on the right-hand side of the screen for when someone comes to the site. And then there's information layers, which are the points that you can turn on and off from the menu, and then when you click the point, an image will be displayed or pop up. You mentioned the LGBT life layer. That's a really interesting project that was a spin-off of that Arts Humanities Research Council University of Bristol project, and that the OutStories Bristol community, as we're looking at, well, how can we get our stories to a wider audience? How can we get that? And we want to use a mapping interface. We actually map our stories, because we've done an exhibition at the archives and at M-Shed, but we want to sort of map those stories. And so we worked with the university and with OutStories to enable them to present that information on the map. And they, although I say I moderate all the material on Know Your Place, that layer is moderated by OutStories. They are the custodians of that data. That I don't have any kind of role in that, my role is to make sure that it's published and people can access it. That's my role. Sure. But that the ownership of that is purely the OutStories community, which is, for me, is like the perfect model in a way. We've set this template, this platform, this channel up for other communities to actually use.
Yeah, I see.
And with a community like OutStories, where you can't say, well, they're purely based in Redcliffe or Clifton or wherever, they're actually city-wide and across the region-wide, because they've got points that go beyond the city boundary. When it's coverage like that, it's great for a community to say, oh, we want to do this, we want to participate in this way. Well, I hope that Know Your Place plays a role within all of that, what we call people getting a sense of place, and community cohesion and all these other sorts of things you hear politicians talking about a lot. I hope Know Your Place does play a role in that. So, as we were talking before we started recording, I was saying about how outside of the council I'm involved with a lot of other community learning projects where we use Know Your Place as a starting point, as a tool to start a community story project, if you like. Let's go as far back as we can. What can we learn very quickly using this resource about what this place was like way, way, way back, beyond living memory?
Yeah.
Well, now let's talk about the living memory stuff now, and let's capture some of that, and let's put it, if you put it on the map, on this resource, you're actually reaching a wider audience, and you're talking to people within your neighbourhood, but then potentially people beyond your neighbourhood to say, look, this is what it means to live in Knowle or Sea Mills or Southmead or wherever it might be. This is what these places mean.
Yeah.
It means it for these reasons, and it's all kind of, it's hopefully, it's captured on here in some way, that people's voices, community voices, are actually coming through about, so if you go on the site and you want to know about Southmead, you can look at the site and you can start to get a flavour of the place from those points. So I think it's quite important. Engagement and participation is about participation in place. It's what it's trying to aim to create, develop, and provide a platform for those things. And it is about thinking about every place in Bristol is special. A lot of people, when they talk about heritage and old parts and the special parts of Bristol, they immediately look at Clifton.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, well, it's all things like the lampposts all going up to Clifton or that sort of stuff, because that's the only place anyone cares about.
Yeah.
And actually, heritage is everywhere. I'm not into tight definitions of what heritage is. It's not a listed building.
Yeah.
It's not Stonehenge. It's actually built. It's the people is as much to do a heritage as it is about the kind of the fabric of the place. Yeah, the two things are, you know, one and part and one and the same. But you need to hear those voices to really get an understanding about what these places are before you change them. Because if you're doing changes to these places without that kind of listening to what the community is saying about this place, you end up with the sorts of places that were created after the Second World War, when you've eroded those places to a large extent and created barriers through big road schemes that then split communities apart without actually taking into consideration what the impact is going to be on that community. And if you'd actually had a resource like this, I'm not saying it would stop Blumenthaldown being demolished or something, but you would hope that those voices would be louder in those considerations.
The Totterdown demolition that Pete refers to represents something of a low point in the relationship between the city's planning department and its citizens. In the 1960s, planners had grand designs of an outer circulatory road ringing the centre of the city. It was proposed that this road would cut right through the South Bristol suburb of Totterdown, and within the space of a decade, compulsory purchase orders and forced removals had led to over 2,000 evictions and over 500 homes and businesses were demolished. Consultation with the public was minimal and the approach was high-handed, and in the end all was for naught as the road was never constructed.
It sounded to me like quite an enlightened way of talking about and thinking about planning is, like you say, planners, you understand why they have an eye on the future and are thinking of projecting, I don't know, traffic flows or pedestrian numbers or whatever it might be forward into the future. But it sounds to me like probably for a lot of planning that's been done in the past, it was always or only looking at the future rather than taking into account the historic development of communities. It was a sort of almost a utopian, this is what we want to build, this is what we want to...
Yeah, there's a big lurch the other way. So the conservation movement in the country, it was born out of the kind of post-war, particularly 60s, kind of highway engineering that was going on in the mid-60s and onwards. Mm. And so the rise of the conservation movement, which led to conservation areas being designated, Clifton and the rest, that was a kind of reaction to that top-down, looking to the future, not caring about the past attitude that was certainly there at that time for many reasons. Now, you're hoping to get to that enlightened place. I think one of the most important things about Know Your Place that a lot of people don't actually realise, and it's probably a good thing they don't, and obviously I'm giving away the secrets here, but this is sitting within the planning department. Know Your Place is a planning tool.
Mm.
If you add a point to the community layer on Know Your Place, you are participating in planning. Because when a developer comes in and they're saying, I've got a proposal for that site, if they haven't looked at Know Your Place, we can say to them straight away, go away, look at Know Your Place, and then come back to me and say whether, you know, what your proposals are in reflecting on what you've seen on Know Your Place. If there's a green diamond on that site or in the vicinity of that site, they've got to look at that and they've got to have what you hope would be a positive response to that thing on the map. Therefore, what you've put on the map has planning weight, actually has, it's having some influence, even sometimes, I mean, I'm not naive, it's potentially a very small influence, but it does have some influence. And if it's not on the map, it's harder to get that influence to be heard or realised within a planning process of change. So that's why it's actually quite a powerful thing. And it actually means that members of the public can actually have, you know, as much a voice through this as they can when they actually write in to comment on the planning applications.
Maybe we can just talk a little bit about the development of Bristol then going back historically, because I suppose we're talking about, you've already mentioned planning after the war, but even going back before that, for instance, the building of the floating harbour, even going back before that, the quayside was changed in the medieval period, that maybe people aren't aware of how the city has changed over time in that way.
Well, that touches on a couple of things that I'm involved with. So, I mean, one is the fact that cities are places of change. Change always happens in cities, and sometimes that change can be like fairly piecemeal and slow and incremental, Other times it is big, big, kind of like this is going to be a radical change to the city. So, you know, we mentioned the roads post-war, then that's a radical change. Creating the inner city ring road is a big M32, big impact stuff.
Yeah.
You know, bringing benefits for many aspects of the city, but also causing harm to other neighbourhoods, as we've mentioned. But if you go way back, you know, the Bristol itself, the name of Bristol comes from a place by the bridge, and the bridge being Bristol Bridge.
Yeah.
Now, okay, the Bristol Bridge you see today is a kind of Victorian altered 18th century bridge. Yeah, so it's rebuilt 18th century stone bridge.
Yeah.
Now it's got Victorian modifications to it, but buried in there that you can actually see the arches, 18th century arches. But that bridge is on the site of the original bridge, almost certainly. I mean, there's arguments about where the original bridge was, but I'm pretty sure that it was in that general area is where it was. That bridge was built to enable crossing of the River Avon. And on the basis, as soon as that bridge is in, this is like an engineering bit of infrastructure that's gone in, and that creates a radical change. From that point, Bristol develops into the city, eventually the city we see today. That's its starting point. And then you mentioned about other things. Following on from that, its economic growth comes from the diversion of the Frome in the 13th century, when they actually dig the channel, which you now, when you stood at the watershed or at the Arnolfini, yeah, that is a man-made channel there, and it was once the River Frome, but it enabled a much bigger dock space for more merchants, more trading, and the growth of Bristol at that point in terms of its economic growth in that period. Bristol became the second most important city in the country for a short time, and that's because of that change that happened there.
And that diversion of the Frome, I'm interested to know, one, how it's done in terms of getting the manpower to do it, but also the in terms of taking those decisions. You know, it would have been the sort of local bigwigs getting together and thinking, this is what we should do.
Shows the power of money.
Yeah.
You know, the people who were saying, actually, we are... who they were, we couldn't name them. You can go look downstairs and in the council chamber here, and you can actually have the mayors all written up on the wall down there, and one of those mayors in there would have been involved in that decision-making process. But it is the wealthy, the merchants, who are basically saying, we're losing money because this isn't happening. So this is money, this is investment that we are going to reap the benefits of for the next 100, 200, and in fact, you know, 800 years, essentially, is what you've seen there. It resulted from that action being taken. Now, the charter from the king of the time is that it was actually instructing the men of Redcliffe to dig out that channel. And interesting that if they hadn't dug that channel out, Redcliffe had lots of quayside. And actually, we could have been having this conversation across the other side of the water in Redcliffe somewhere.
Sure,
and we'd be saying, we'd be talking about Redcliffe as the powerful city of the medieval period, not Bristol. But that decision at that moment, someone must have had the political ear to say, come on, this we need to do this, because Bristol will then, as a result, become this really, really amazing place. And you, Mr. King, you will earn lots in taxes, so it's a really good thing to do. It's all about the money. But what's amazing about it, from my as a landscape perspective, is that decision on that day somewhere has led to the landscape we see over there now. And it's still there in our modern city. And just like the bridge, it's still there in a modern city. So you see these, what we call as radical changes, and they've left their landscape legacy in what we see today, which which is you know, particularly of interest to me when we're talking about the story of a place, story of Bristol. These are the fundamentals, just like the Clifton Suspension Bridge. These define what we are as a city. Just the bridge, Bristol Bridge, floating harbour, suspension bridge, these are absolute fundamentals for us, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think having a sense of it, like you say, in terms of understanding your landscape a little bit better, when you walk along the street, understanding, 50 years ago how this would have looked different, or even that there are parts of it that 500 years ago didn't look that different because it's, you know, following the river or whatever it is. I think having a sense like that is pretty powerful, isn't it?
So there's other thing I was going to say about that. What I'm trying to do now, over a long period of time, it's going to take a long time to do, is we're creating these things called story maps that we're gradually each one of those episodes, so I've just described two episodes, well, three, but Bristol Bridge, the first episode, Diversion of the Froon, it's the second episode, and then later episodes being the creation of the Ring Road or the creation of the Floating Harbour, these other sorts of things. These are moments in time. So each, those are chapters that I see as this kind of like land, book about the landscape history of Bristol that we are telling through what we call story maps, which shows how that bit of the landscape has changed. So I've done two so far. I've done one for actually post First World War, so based on the Homes for Heroes project, which has been involved with this year because of the Centenary of the Housing Act from 1919. So I've done a Bristol Homes for Heroes story map, which, because when that decision to build new housing for the working classes was introduced and implemented in the city, it radically changed parts of the city in terms of building these suburbs. So you don't get Seamills and Hillfields and Knoll unless you have that act and the decision by the council to build these homes. Then the other one I've built, the story map I've done is one for Broadmead, because that talks about how after the Second World War, the decision-making process that radically changed the retail area for the city, the primary retail area. Initially, originally it was on Castle Street, well, post-Civil War it was Castle Street, but then it, after the Second World War, the decision to build Broadmead is quite an interesting one, and now you've got a whole landscape there that has come about from that decision made in a building like this. We're talking the City Hall. You know, that they wouldn't have been City Hall when they made that decision, it would have been the old council house, but they've decided to radically change that bit of landscape. Again, it's all about the money, it's about, you know, retail investment, all the rest of it. But each one of these story maps takes a chapter like that and presents it in a mapping form, so you can actually see that landscape change, backed up with images that you see on Know Your Place. Because when people talk about, you know, one of the criticisms they have of Know Your Place is that there's so much, as you said, 14,000 things. How do I get the information that I need or want, or how do I learn more? These story maps kind of cherry pick that information to tell that story.
I see.
So that if you want to know about a particular theme, what was the impact of the Second World War, you can read this story map and it will tell you what some of those impacts were. There will be another one about the road schemes, the post-war road schemes, saying actually, we talk about bomb damage to Bristol, Blitz, and okay, we ended up with Castle Park as a result, or eventually ended up with Castle Park as a result of that, but there's no question the road schemes after the Second World War, particularly in the 1960s, had a much bigger impact than the bombing ever did.
Yes.
But you can say that, unless you actually show it on a map, you don't really get a full sense of it. You might, you know, you talk to someone in Totterdown and say, oh yeah, I remember when this was a great neighbourhood, and these, I mean, it's still a great neighbourhood, but when they had these houses coming down the hill here by the free lamps, and then they just came away in the 1970s and absolutely swept it all away for a road scheme that never get built. But that's only one place. There's other places that were impacted in a similar way and were impacted. I mean, Eastern Way is a great example where that just like ploughed through a whole neighbourhood.
Yeah, and maybe there's not the kind of cultural memory that you get with the bombing, and, you know, obviously that's like a very visceral event, and, okay, building a road is not the same thing, but it can still, like you say, have a massive impact on the community.
Massive impact. I mean, you talk about, I mean, I live in Montpellier, and I will talk to people who live in St Paul's, and they will now say, and they have always lived in St Paul's, and they will say, yeah, they used to really well connected with Eastern. And now M32 has created this division between these two neighbourhoods. I mean, you've still got footbridges, you still go over there, and I mean, I still walk over that way, but it's not as welcoming a journey as it once would have been.
No,
you would have walked down these nice streets with houses and shops and so on, walked past there, and you could have gone from St Paul's into Eastern, and you wouldn't actually notice where you made that
where
change.
Where the dividing line is.
Now there's a very clear dividing line between those two places.
You work with Know Your Place. You've talked about developing more of these story maps. I'm also interested, you work in planning. What your, even not too broad a question, what your hopes are, or you see the major challenges are for Bristol in the future?
Well, you made the connection there with the story maps. The last of my story maps will be looking at the future. Because each one of those story maps that I will be creating, of looking back, the beginning of each of those chapters is a challenge the city faced. So the first challenge is, how do you cross the river and you build a bridge? Second challenge, how do we create more dock space? Oh, we divert the river. How do we get around the city? Oh, we build these ring roads. those each time it's a big challenge, and the city got together essentially and met that challenge and sorted it out. And the last chapter will be looking at, well, what are the challenges today? And the challenges today are centre around the climate. I mean, climate change is a significant, big challenge that we're not really addressing, not properly. We really want to take it on. We've got to all work together and tackle that issue. Mm. You know, I mean, the grand scheme, and that will lead to landscape change, radical landscape change in the city. And we've got to look at that and look at it bravely and say, well, okay, well, how can we do that? But do it in the right way, not in a kind of concrete carriageway, post-war way. Mm. We've got to look at it in a kind of a more green infrastructure kind of way. So that's the first thing. And the other thing is about housing. That's a big thing. It's always housing is a big on the agenda. What does our future housing look like? So those two things, and then transportation. Those are the three key issues that the city now needs to wrestle with and take on, because Metrobus has certainly not solved any of the transportation issues in the city. So what does a future transportation system in Bristol actually look like? And not kind of like, you know, dreams of trams or whatever it might be. Yeah. It's like, what would it really look like? Because if you tackle the transport, and you tackle the housing, you could actually start to properly, if you do it with climate in mind, you potentially can start to address the climate change issues through all those three things, if you think about them being a holistic approach to that.
As a port and commercial centre, the physical landscape of Bristol has often changed rapidly to reflect new economic realities. The major turning points in the development of the city, the first bridge over the Avon at the heart of the city, the diversion of the Frome and the expansion of the harbourside in the 13th century, the construction of the floating harbour in the 19th century, all these to some extent reflect Bristol's self-conscious image as an important trading hub to the southwest of England and then as a gateway to the Atlantic. It has never become a heritage city like, say, York or even Bath, which are to some extent preserved and frozen as monuments to their own pasts. For me, Bristol, for much of its history, has reflected the demands of trade and commerce. As Pete said, it's all about the money. Whether the city will choose, or can afford to choose, to follow the same path in future remains to be seen. Many thanks to Pete Insole for talking with me, and many thanks to you for listening. If you've enjoyed the podcast, then please subscribe or give us a favourable review on iTunes. And if you have any ideas for future episodes of the podcast, you can email bristolhistorypodcast@gmail.com.